Thank you for joining me for another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today, we turn our attention back to the inspired book of Exodus, chapter number 35, and we're going to pick up our story at verse number 20. This is right after the second 40-day period that Moses spent with God. So it is now the very beginning of September by our calendar. It's the middle of the sixth Jewish month. They arrived at Mount Sinai in the very tail end of the spring. So they are now going to spend the rest of this first year of the Exodus, all the way up until the springtime, working on the tabernacle. Moses tells them about it. Probably repeats a lot of stuff we saw earlier in the book of Exodus, but he doesn't double up on the information here at this juncture. He just simply says, all right, everybody, we need material. We need you to donate material. And we need people who know how to work with all of this material to volunteer their skills to be supervised by a couple of really skilled artisans to manufacture the components of these holy things. And so immediately upon hearing this call for donations and for skilled workers, this is what the text tells us. And remember, this is Moses writing this down. So he was there and saw it happen. Verse 20, then all the congregation of the people of Israel departed from the presence of Moses, and they came, everyone whose heart stirred him, and everyone whose spirit moved him, and brought he who is his contribution to be used for the tent of meeting, and for all its service, and for the holy garments. So this is a big building project push, and they're not asking for cash. They're asking for the actual material. And these people are very excited to donate out of their wealth because they all became wealthy when they left Egypt. They are all excited to donate out of their wealth for this building project. Verse 22, so they came, both men and women, all who were willing, all who were of a willing heart, brought brooches and earrings and signet rings and armlets, all sorts of gold objects. So a lot of the things they picked up as part of their back wages was jewelry, precious stones that had been set in gold or silver. And some of it would have been just gold and silver by itself, maybe bronze. And so here comes all of this jewelry that is going to be able to be repurposed for the building of the tabernacle. All sorts of gold objects, every man dedicating an offering of gold to he who is. So they're bringing all sorts of precious metals and precious and semi-precious jewels. Everyone who possessed blue or purple or scarlet yarns or fine linen or goat's hair or tanned ram skins or goat skins brought them. So here we have a whole bunch of types of fabric or the material that can be turned into fabric. This comes and is donated. Everyone who could make a contribution of silver or bronze brought it as he who is his contribution. Silver and bronze sometimes were pots and pans, containers of different sorts, so that would have been in the booty that they collected as part of their wages. They did not have coinage back at this time, but they did have chunks of silver, chunks of gold, or bars or rings of silver or gold that could be traded as a thing of value. And so all of that was part of what they received for their past wages. And now they're kicking in some of that. Everyone who had possessed acacia wood of any use in the work brought it. Now, this is an interesting thing. When Israel left Egypt, it is clear that they were taking wagon loads of material. And apparently, some of the material was just simply lumber, just simply wood, just rolling out of there with these Israelis as they leave. And some of the people who had that wood in their possession, when Moses talks about, well, this needs to be made out of acacia wood, that needs to be made out of acacia wood, they're like, well, we got tons of acacia wood, here you go. And so they just give it. And every skillful woman spun with her hands. So now we start talking about the artisans. Some of the things that they're going to need is a fabric made out of goat's hair. Now, we read that up in verse 23, that they just had goat's hair from, you know, where springtime comes and summertime's on the horizon. And so you get that hair off your goats, you get that wool off your sheep, and you don't just toss it. You consider that a resource, and so you store it up in bags or some sort of container. And so they got a ton of that. And immediately after Moses reveals, well, we're going to need this gigantic drape made out of woven goat's hair, a whole bunch of the ladies go, well, we can do that. That's within our skill set. And so they did it. And they brought all that they had spun in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. A lot of the Egyptian labor that these Israelis had done was construction. That's true. That's the whole idea of the brick thing that we saw during the Exodus story. But not every Israeli was enslaved to do construction labor. Some of them were in these industrial trades of making fabric or making jewelry or working with wood. And so here we have people that know that sort of thing offering their services. And that's exactly what Moses had called for at the Lord's command. All the women whose hearts stirred them to use their skill, spun the goat's hair. And the leaders brought onyx stones and stones to be set for the ephod and for the breastpiece. So even the people who are at the tops of these different family groups, these clan groups, they're kicking in out of the things that they'd collected. And that includes onyx stones that are going to be engraven and part of the uniform. Verse 28, spices, that'd be like the cinnamon sort of stuff, the oil for the lamp, that's going to be olive oil. Again, we don't really picture this as well as we should, I think. They left Egypt with wagon loads full of jars of olive oil. They had a lot of it, because olive oil is used for making light, but it's also used in making food, and it's also used as kind of the suspension for different sorts of cosmetics and things. And so they got a lot of olive oil, and that's mentioned here. And that's going to be used for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense. And all the men and women, the people of Israel, whose hearts moved them to bring anything for the work of He who is, had commanded by Moses to be done, brought it as a free will offering to He who is. I love this story. These folks have been given the vision of a tabernacle that they will all be connected to. It is a building project that everyone is going to want to be invested in. And so they are given the chance to donate and participate in the building project. And I love that idea to be used for our modern day building projects. We need people not to just simply kick in cash. We need people to put in some of their heart, maybe some sweat equity into the whole thing, to really be on board that this is our project together. Verse 30. Then Moses said to the people of Israel, "See, he who is has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah." Now, if we are correct, based on Josephus's information, that Hur is the husband of Miriam, which I think it's very likely, then that means that Bezalel is Miriam and Hur's grandson, that Bezalel is Aaron and Moses' grandnephew. And God singled him out specifically by name as someone that is going to lead the artisans in the creation and artistry of the tabernacle. Now, we can probably guess as to his age. We know that Miriam, Aaron, and Moses are all 80 and above. So more than likely, their kids are going to be in their 60s and 50s at this time. And the kids of those kids, meaning Moses and Aaron's and Miriam's grandkids or nieces and nephews, are probably going to be in their 30s and 20s. And so more than likely, Bezalel is in his 30s or his 20s, and he probably had been trained in a lot of this artisan work because of his aptitude and his God-given abilities and talents. He'd probably been trained by the Egyptians to work in all this sort of stuff to begin with, and now God says, "I want him to work for me." And so, verse 31, "He has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, with intelligence and knowledge, and with all craftsmanship." So Bezalel is one of those unique individuals that is not just simply really good at one thing. He is really good at a whole bunch of things. And here are some of the things that he's good at. Verse 32, "To devise artistic designs, to work in gold and silver and bronze, in cutting stones for setting, in carving wood, for work in every skilled craft, and he has inspired him to teach." So he is going to be not just simply hands-on, being the artisan and designer of all the fine-tuning aspects of the tabernacle, he is going to teach a whole bunch of craftsmen and women working under him. And it's not just him. He has a partner. Both him and Oholiab, the son of Ahisamach of the tribe of Dan. So Bezalel and Oholiab will be mentioned multiple times as the key artisans who take the vision of Moses and bring it to reality over about a six-month period. Verse 35, "He has filled them with skill to do every sort of work done by an engraver or by a designer or by an embroiderer in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen, or by a weaver, by any sort of workman or skilled designer." So they are very gifted across a broad spectrum of discipline. Verse 1 of chapter 36. "Bezalel and Oholiab and every craftsman in whom he who is has put skill and intelligence to know how to do any work in the construction of the sanctuary shall work in accordance with all that he who is has commanded." So Moses gives them the grand design. He describes it, and no doubt he is there watching and giving feedback. No, Oholiab, that wasn't exactly like that. It was a little bit more like this, and then Oholiab, you know, fixes it. Or maybe he talks to his grandnephew, Bezalel. Bezalel, I don't think you quite understand what I'm trying to tell you, what I saw. It was like this, and he described a little bit more until Bezalel got it. And so that's what's going to be going on, is these two men are the hands-on and trainers for those that are going to be hands-on for the making of the components and of the joining together of those components for the tabernacle and for the uniforms of the priests. And then Moses will just be double-checking as it happens. Verse 2, Moses called Bezalel and Oholiab and every craftsman in whose mind he who is had put skill, everyone whose heart stirred him up to come to do the work. And they received from Moses all the contribution that the people of Israel had brought for doing the work in the sanctuary. So here's the first big meeting after the donation time, after people have volunteered to work with Bezalel and Oholiab. Moses says, well, this is all the stuff we got. And they still kept bringing him freewill offerings every morning. So it wasn't a one-time thing. These people keep showing up with things. Verse 4, so that all the craftsmen who were doing every sort of task in the sanctuary came, each from the task that he was doing, and said to Moses, the people bring much more than enough to do the work that he who is has commanded us to do. So the craftsmen, over a period of time, and it probably wasn't very long, people keep bringing donations and they say, Moses, there's too much. We have more than enough for the work that we have in front of us. And so Moses does something that seldom happens. He, as a leader of a congregation of people, goes to them and says, enough. Everybody stop. You've given more than what we need. Now, I have preached this sermon from this passage for a building project that wouldn't it be such a wonderful thing, a marvel, that during our building project, at some point we'd have to tell you, stop giving. You've given more than what we needed. But I've never seen that happen in a building project other than this one right here. So Moses says this, verse 6, he gave the command and word was proclaimed throughout the camp. Let no man or woman do anything more for the contribution for the sanctuary. So everybody knock it off. You don't need to weave up any more goat's hair fabric. You don't need to embroider anything else with another kerub. You don't need to kick in any more jewelry that you have in your possession. Everybody has enough. So the people were restrained from bringing, for the material they had was sufficient to do all the work and more. So they'll have enough to keep around for any type of repair jobs that might be necessary over the next 40 years while they're in the wilderness. Verse 8. All the craftsmen among the workmen made the tabernacle with tin curtains. Now, we're going to see some repeated material starting at this point. And so I'm going to abbreviate some of it. I'll just summarize some of it because we talked about it in detail once before. Somebody asked me not too long ago, why do you think there's so much repetition in these sections of Moses' writings? And my answer was that more than likely, these historical documents are intended to be reread aloud on a regular basis to the Jewish people because they didn't have printing presses back at that time. So nobody got copies made very often of the sacred scrolls. So they would read them aloud on regular occasions. And so repetition helps memory. So when you hear something once, you might forget it. When you hear something twice, you might forget certain parts of it. But if you keep hearing it over and over and over again, it sticks. And so that's probably why you see so much repetition throughout this. So we know that what we've got are 10 panels. It uses the term curtains here, but we've basically got these tapestry panels. They were made of fine twisted linen and blue and purple and scarlet yarns with gerubim skillfully worked. So they have the four-faced, four-winged angelic beings known as gerubim that are embroidered into these tapestries. More than likely, they show only two faces. When we read some of the descriptions in, I think it's Ezekiel, the cherubim are represented by faces of an eagle, I think, and I think it might be a lion. But anyway, it's two of the four facing opposite directions because it's a 2D presentation of a 3D being. So you can't show every bit of information unless, I guess, you were Picasso and then you'd somehow manage to do that. But these are the length of the curtains. Each curtain was 28 cubits. Now that goes from the bottom, near the bottom of one side of the tabernacle, up and over the top, and then down almost to the bottom of the other side. All these curtains were the same size. They were 28 cubits by 4 cubits. Verse 10, he coupled five curtains to one another. So more than likely, they are sewn. These panels are sewn together so that now we end up with a giant drape that is 28 by 20 cubits, remember. Then verse 11, he made loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain on the first set. So these little blue loops are going to be places where you use gold rings or clasps to tie two big drapes together. Likewise, he made them on the edge of the outermost of the second set. He made 50 loops on the one curtain, made 50 loops on the edge of the other, and the loops were opposite one another. He made 50 clasps of gold, and he coupled the curtains one to the other with clasps so that the tabernacle is a whole. Now, picture again, and it's hard, I know, to verbalize this. The tabernacle rigid form is going to be these frameworks of acacia wood covered in gold. And then draped over the top of that will be these 20 cubit by 28 cubit drapes. And then those two drapes will be tied together with gold loops or gold clasps. And the seam of those gold clasps is going to be right over the dividing line between the holy place and the most holy place. And so that becomes the first layer of the tabernacle. And the tapestry is facing inward for its best viewing. And it will be seen through the open framework on the walls. And of course, it will be seen very clearly as the roof with all of those angelic beings, those cherubim, presented as guardians of this special place. Now, verse 14, he also made curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. The goat's hair is going to be black more than likely. A lot of the tents, even of modern periods that are made of goat's hair, are black in the Middle East. This will become the overdrape. And it is made of 11 total curtains, but it's done in the same way. You've got panels that are 30 cubits long this time, so they'll go all the way to the bottom on each side. and they're 4 cubits wide. And then you sew them together. You've got 5 panels and 6 panels, so that there are 11 curtains altogether. And then the 2 larger drapes are chained together because of loops, not by gold this time, but by bronze. That's verse 18, so that they become a whole. And guess what? That little joining seam is going to be exactly over the joining seam of the first layer, the tapestry layer, and that'll be over the dividing point between the holy place and the most holy place. And then verse number 19, and he made for the tent a covering of tanned ram skins and goat skins. Now, the last time we saw this, it sounded as if there were 2 layers here, a layer of tanned ram skins and then a layer of tanned goat skins. But the way it's presented here, it could be that these two are mixed together. Now, I don't think that's the case, but I do throw that out there for you to think of. My reason for not thinking it is the case is because they tried to segregate animals more often than not in life, and so I'd expect that kind of in their leather stage as well. Now, these layers, if there's 2 of them, are, I believe, weather layers. They are not described as to how big they are, but they certainly overcover the entirety of the tabernacle and perhaps even provide a little bit of shade or weather protection on all the sides of the tabernacle so that the priests would be able to do their work right up along the edges of the tabernacle building. Well, we're out of time, so mark our place right there, and we'll get right back into the Word the next time the Lord gives us opportunity.